This is Outspoken, the podcast that's not afraid to say exactly what you're thinking.
Our names are Amy, Kate and Sophie Tauber. We're identical triplets, but we often don't have identical opinions. So sometimes things can get heated.
Outspoken covers all things reality TV, influencers, entertainment and issues facing women.
That is so fetch.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Outspoken. Thank you for joining us again. Now, it is a momentous week for us because Sophie is becoming a mother. Well, a fur mother. And we have been counting down the days. Has it been 8 weeks now, Soph?
Yeah, it's been eight very, very long weeks. I have had like a countdown going since week six. I keep sending my boyfriend Brandon updates of how many more sleeps it is. It is currently four more sleeps till Mr. Archie comes into my life.
And there is a bit of contentious issues around the name because I think you should be calling the dog Manuka because it is a golden... Wait, what brand?
It's
what
a golden...
brand? What breed?
This is great off the back of our puppy farming topic yesterday. It's definitely not from a puppy farm, is it, Sophie?
It's from a very prestigious breeder in Adelaide. It is the only one that breeds golden cockers.
Prestigious.
Well...
Yeah, well, it's a golden cocker spaniel, and what's funny about that is that Sophie's boyfriend's last name is Hancock. Yeah.
But don't you think that it would be really cute to be called Manuka because it's a honey flavor, Manuka honey?
That's a girl's name though.
No, I think it's unisex.
And well, I think Archie because we've got Megan and Harry who have Archie, Master Archie. We can call him Archibald if he's being naughty.
But do you know what, Archie? The name Archie for a dog is like a dime a dozen. Mm. If you want this dog to go off on Instagram, which I think you do, because you've already made an Instagram account for the dog despite you actually having it, I think you should call it Manuka.
Well, if anyone would like to go and follow him, it's Archie _ golden cocker spaniel.
Potentially change to Manuka.
Well,
the
I feel
golden
like
cocker spaniel.
Well, I feel like when you're at the dog park, you're gonna really feel that there are a lot of Archies out there. When you call him back and there's like 10 dogs come running at you, I think you're gonna regret not calling him Manuka.
The thing that I'm most worried about is I've done so much research into cocker spaniels and apparently they wee every 30 minutes, which is similar to me. I've got a very, very small bladder, so we'll be getting along just fine.
Well, in regards to the name, we will put a poll up and to see if you agree with Kate and I that Sophie should call her puppy Manuka or if she should just call it Archie.
What about Winston? I know that was a name that
His name is already on his official like breeder's letters.
Those things can be changed.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say Instagram. Like the name Manuka.
Look, I think that Amy and I, even though we're aunties, we probably have no right in naming
Well, I think if I'm paying $2,500 for this dog, I should be able to name it.
Well, anyway, let's move along. And I'm sure Sophie will be inundating the Outspoken Instagram feed with pictures of Archie.
Have you been wondering why there's an influx of influencers promoting alcohol on your newsfeed? Like many businesses, the alcohol industry has been forced to pivot their marketing to reflect social distancing and self-isolation. And with influencers' normal brand deals falling through thanks to the pandemic, many have lined up payments through alcohol brands. Sophie, can you explain to us just how prevalent alcohol advertising is in the influencer sphere?
Well, even before lockdown, alcohol advertising with influencers has been incredibly prevalent. I mean, you look at a recent study by Vic Health and it shows that 3/4 of Australia's top 70 influencers feature alcohol in their posts. And worryingly, only 1/4 of those actually reveal that these posts are sponsored and have been paid for. And Vic Health has described the alcohol industry's use of social media as completely underhanded and says that it is used to influence young children.
Well, one bit of info I found really interesting was the age that influencers are actually allowed to promote alcohol. I didn't realize that you had to be over the age of 25 to actually be advertising alcohol.
Yeah, that really surprised me because it made me reflect there are a lot of big influencers out there who have been pretty quiet in the alcohol space. While they'll show themselves drinking, I haven't seen them officially advertising alcohol. That was an interesting revelation.
Well, a few years back, there was actually a campaign from a vodka crew company, and they received a lot of complaints because the model that they used in their ad looked a lot younger than 18. She was over 18, but people said she looked as if she was a teenager. And so there were a lot of complaints. She even, part of the ad showed her using glitter to cover up dark circles around her eyes, which were obviously caused from heavy drinking as well, which a lot of people thought was a bit unnecessary.
I do find this whole over 25 thing pretty interesting because for someone who has always been ID'd up until my late 20s. I always got annoyed because apparently the person selling the alcohol must think that you look over 25. So it's quite interesting that even an influencer who can legally drink isn't actually allowed to advertise an alcoholic product.
But how many influencers who are over 25, how many would you confuse for being in their early 20s as well? I mean, it opens up a can of worms.
I think it's quite the opposite. Chloe Zepp, I literally thought she was in her late 20s and I found out she's only 21. So it's quite interesting that she can't advertise alcohol, even though she has been.
Yeah.
We'll get into that a little bit later.
Well, the other thing that I didn't know was that if you are promoting alcohol, 25% of your audience can't be under the age of 18, which is a rule that I didn't know was in place. And it is a good rule to have.
That is good. But on social media, you can be so deceptive with your age. I remember making accounts back in the day for our little cousins on Facebook, and I think you had to be over 13. And we, of course, just put that they were over 13 when they were 8 and 10.
That is such a good point. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is in Australia, the alcohol industry self-regulates its advertising, which means that there's no government body to intervene and to keep people accountable.
Yeah, and that means that an alcohol company can put out an ad on social media and it doesn't have to be approved by the government. It just has to meet these certain code of ethics. However, as Sophie said, that's a self-regulated code of ethics. And while people can make complaints to the Advertising Standards Bureau, it's just a system where they then look into it and the ad is taken down. So what I found really interesting is that when an influencer works with an alcohol brand, if it is deemed that the ad doesn't meet this code of ethics, then the ad is just pulled, the influencer has to delete their post, but there's no onus on the influencer to ensure that that post meets the standards, which I found really interesting in light of Kendall Jenner getting sued for her involvement in advertising the Fyre Festival. It seems like the Australian law is a lot more lenient on influencers than it is in, say, the UK and America.
Well, we have seen an influx of influencers advertising alcohol during COVID-19. Kate, how has alcohol marketing changed since the pandemic?
Well, just like a lot of other industries, the alcohol industry has had to pivot their marketing to reflect social distancing and self-isolation. So many have taken this opportunity to capitalize on people staying at home by promoting their contactless home deliveries, which is raising a lot of issues because that means that people don't have to show ID. So you can be a kid and you can go and order from BWS Alcohol and then the alcohol is just dropped at your door. The delivery person doesn't have to see who's getting the alcohol. So it's a bit of a worry.
What, so you don't even have to put in your ID?
Well, you could literally take your parents' ID, put the details in at the checkout, and then it's just dropped off at the door.
I think the other thing that is worrying is a lot of brands seem to be promoting stockpiling and heavy consumption of alcohol during this time as well. I mean, you look at Thirsty Camel and they were made to remove a Facebook post because it joked about customers stockpiling their goods as opposed to toilet paper, and they were made to remove this post. But it does come into question whether brands can actually use humor or memes to convey a particular message during this time.
Yeah, well, I think with the Thirsty Camel example, they had a complaint made and their response was, well, it was in humor and it was in good fun, but it actually had to be taken down because it did breach the code of ethics. And I think it's interesting to note that obviously during the pandemic, a lot of bars and clubs have been closed, and that has meant that alcohol consumption in bottle shops in the last week of March actually rose 86% compared to the year before.
Well, I've had heaps of friends who say that they can't believe how often they've now been to BWS's or your drive-through alcohol places since the pandemic.
Well, it's fairly obvious because I've seen a lot of my own friends and people I know that are drinking more, and I think it's because when you're working at home, there's no differentiation between the weekend and a weeknight. It just seems like a lot of people are rewarding themselves with alcohol, which is their choice. But I suppose it does trickle down into people that are at home with kids and that becoming a normalized thing to do.
Well, I have seen a lot of posts that are sort of promoting alcohol as a relaxant. So whether it's just mums who are saying, oh, I'm having a wine tonight because basically the kids are home from school and they're driving me mental. But there are apparently laws around promoting alcohol as a relaxant.
One of the codes says that you must not suggest the consumption of alcohol may create or contribute to a significant change in mood or environment or suggest that it offers any therapeutic benefits. And I think that what has landed a lot of alcohol brands in hot water at the moment, because that seems to be their key marketing strategy. A lot have also started offering care packages as well.
I think in terms of promoting alcohol as a relaxant, I think BWS's Good Wines Chat has really done that. So they've got comedian Celeste Barber as the face of their campaign. And obviously everyone loves Celeste and she's hilarious, and she is in isolation. And the first part of the campaign is she's got like a towel on her head, she's got a robe on, and she's got, you know, like the little eye mask that you see everyone in isolation wearing. And she is rewarding herself with a glass of champagne.
Oh my God. I was actually shocked when I saw one of her recent videos, because it showed her, it sort of implied that she just got out of bed and then the BWS had dropped off some drinks to her doorstep, and then she pops open the champagne and, no, I think it was a wine, sorry, and she starts drinking it in the morning. And I would assume that that's almost promoting binge drinking in a way. I just felt kind of uncomfortable about how it was portrayed.
Well, I think looking closer at BWS's campaign, I think they have been quite ethical in the influencers they have used, because a lot of them are a bit of a slightly older demographic. You know, you've got Georgia Love, who's in her 30s, Olivia Rogers, who's late 20s, and also Celeste Barber, as you said, who's in her 40s. And they've also required all of the influencers to write hashtag ad, which legally isn't required of them, but is an ethical step in making sure that young people don't think that this is just what they do. They're actually getting paid for this.
The thing is, while they're being ethical around it, do you guys actually feel a little bit uncomfortable when you do see alcohol being advertised on, say, podcasts or in your Instagram feed? Because I'm finding it a little bit sort of, I don't know if I like it.
Well, it's really ramped up, and that is due to the pandemic, because while a lot of brands' marketing budgets have dropped off, obviously the alcohol industry is booming because people are ordering more alcohol online and at the bottle shop. So they have marketing budget to push onto influencers. So maybe an influencer who maybe didn't want to advertise alcohol before is actually thinking, well, I might actually have to, because all my other brand deals have dropped off.
Well, I've seen a crazy stat that shows that social media brands advertising alcohol have risen by 350% during the coronavirus pandemic. And there was a little study done on a Friday night, and it showed that every 35 seconds there was a new alcohol brand advertising something, which is pretty scary.
Well, I think it's also interesting because a lot of alcohol brands invest a lot of money into festivals that are obviously not happening at the moment. So that means they've got, as we were saying before, a bigger budget to spend on influencers.
Well, on the topic of alcohol promotion and festivals, I didn't realize that so many alcohol companies actually paid for influencers to go to events like Coachella. And also, when there are festivals that are sponsored by alcohol companies, I didn't realize as well that they will send photographers down to get sort of sneaky pics of the festival, but they'll purposely choose people to pose with cups promoting whatever brand it is, or bottles or whatever.
I suppose it's a bit like when Canadian Club sponsored the Australian Open and they had the Canadian Club bar and they invited a lot of influencers to attend. I think with festivals as well, I think we're used to seeing clothing brands sending influencers, and you don't really look into the deals then that they have with that alcohol brand, because you just generally think that influencers are going to be drinking at these events.
That is true. I mean, playing devil's advocate, we kind of seem as if we're demonizing any influencer that does promote alcohol, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I think what I find a bit iffy though is the fact that some of the influencers who are being targeted do have a very young and impressionable audience.
Well, that's based on our own impression though, because we don't have access to their analytics, so we really don't know. Like, you might think that someone has a young audience, but when you look into it, they may not. But what I would find interesting is, how is the audience looked at? So someone like Michael Finch or Shani Grimmon, who you may think has a young audience, their young audience might all be on YouTube, but their older audience might be on Instagram. I'm wondering if whatever platform that they choose to advertise on, is it just that audience that they look at? Because there are people that are huge on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. Well, TikTok's a big one because obviously TikTok have a massively young audience. So it's just interesting to see, is it just that one platform that they look at?
Now, we touched on before that you actually have to be over 25 in order to promote alcohol on Instagram. But I actually didn't realize that if you have publicized that you have an issue with alcohol, you're actually not meant to be able to promote alcohol either, which kind of opens another can of worms, because we have seen Mitchell Orville recently talk about his issues with alcohol. But he's also then, when he's talked about his issues with alcohol in different podcasts or different interviews, he's then spruiked his own alcohol business.
Yeah, well, for those who don't know Mitchell Orville, he has admitted to being an alcoholic and has spoken very openly about his struggles with that, and also his struggles with drug addiction. And as you say, it is kind of an awkward situation because he is a recovering alcoholic who runs an alcohol brand. And recently they have got quite inventive and creative with the ways they're promoting their brand. They're doing a lot of competitions in order to give away their product. And that does get them into a little bit of trouble because there are rules around promotions of competitions which encourage heavy consumption of alcohol.
Yeah, so one of the competitions is a little bit similar to the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory finding the golden ticket, except I think it's using your smartphone, you scan the bottle of wine, and if there's some sort of gremlin or genie or something.
It's like a Pokemon character.
Yeah, some sort of character comes out, you win. I also think in terms of the competition, another interesting side of this whole thing with Mitchell is the fact that he's actually only 23. And when I was looking through the Instagram page that promotes his alcohol business, his girlfriend, Chloe Zepp, was obviously front of the promotion and she's only 21.
Hmm.
So it is interesting because obviously, as we said, it's a self-regulated system and it's based on people making complaints. But I don't think the everyday person would know that that's what the ruling is.
So in that scenario, while they're sharing photos of Chloe Zepp, my understanding is both Mitchell and Chloe own the company. So in terms of people actually getting in trouble, they would probably get in trouble if they are breaching those guidelines because they're the owners. They're not just appearing as influencers.
Well, that's a really tough one though, because if you are a young influencer, lots of people make up their own brands. It is weird that you can be over 18, be allowed to own the brand, but yet can't appear in the marketing.
Well, another very problematic campaign that has come up during COVID-19 is a US beer company called Busch Beer. I hope I'm pronouncing that right because I have not drunk a beer in my life.
How could you pronounce Busch Beer
wrong? Well, it's B-U-S-C-H, so I assume that's Busch.
Mm. I don't know.
Anyway, so they've had a campaign where in order to win 3 months worth of beer, you have to foster or adopt a dog from a rescue center. Now,
oh my gosh.
How many problematic issues does that bring up? I mean, are we going to have these dogs then having to find a new home once this campaign is over?
Well, what's the issue? So you can have some competitions, but you can't have others. I thought it was that you can't promote a competition where you're sculling alcohol.
Well,
or
I'm more saying that this campaign is an issue because people are going to go out and buy a dog and then they are going to probably abandon the dog when they haven't won the competition.
Yeah, especially if it's an alcoholic that really wants to win a year's supply of beer, is it best that we get them to foster a dog?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the rule there is, Amy, that marketers must not encourage the excessive or rapid consumption of alcohol. So where there are competitions, for instance, like Mitchell Orville's, where they're promoting you to find a golden ticket, that is encouraging you to buy more and more and more beer.
So you couldn't do like a neck nomination as an Instagram competition?
No, probably not anymore.
It is interesting because the whole issue of influencers promoting alcohol is it is really glamorizing alcohol consumption and I suppose in some way binge drinking and daily drinking. And if you look at laws surrounding the advertisement of gambling, you're actually not allowed to glamorize gambling. So it'll be interesting to see if there are laws in the future which stop the glamorization of alcohol.
Well, I definitely think there needs to be those rules in place.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that we always seem to be a little bit behind with the influencer industry. As we touched upon earlier, the Australian laws are very different to the UK and American laws, and it's sort of reflected in one of the campaigns that has been launched by the Alcohol and Drug Foundation. So recently, off the back of the pandemic, they launched a campaign saying you haven't been drinking alone. That was based on kids seeing their parents drinking in lockdown. The ad centered around kids on staged Zoom calls and they were repeating commonly used adult phrases in regards to drinking. So it's quite interesting that there's this big focus on drinking in the home, but not so much on how kids are viewing drinking by influential people on the internet that are readily coming into their home as well.
Well, it's obviously working for alcohol companies because they keep doing it. So they're obviously seeing a return on their investment.
Well, it's also a lot cheaper than paying for a big shoot with 5 models. You can't really track that return on investment, but you get 5 influencers in who then create their own content. So if you look at the BWS, Olivia Rogers has gone and taken her own photo of her and her dog on the couch. Georgia Love has filmed her own little video about it. So it's like they don't have to pay for the production of the video. They're getting that influencer's audience. So it's probably a lot cheaper than creating a big new campaign that they film themselves.
Do you know what's scary though? All the ads seem to be targeted at women. And there have been stats recently that showed consumption of alcohol has risen by at least 40% for young women. And we're seeing more and more young women who are going out and are binge drinking. I mean, I'm not saying it's not okay for people to enjoy a drink on the weekend, but it is a little bit scary when you can see the alcohol companies specifically targeting young women.
Well, and normalizing.
Yeah. And I think the thing that is most concerning is that the alcohol is, of course, a depressant. So in these times where we're already feeling anxious and stressed, that's just going to emphasize these feelings further. And these effects are creating new habits, as you guys were suggesting before. So once we do return to normal, we're going to see more people binge drinking during the week because it's a new habit that they've developed.
Yeah, I think it's this issue of normalizing it, which was very apparent in choosing someone like Celeste Barber, who everyone relates to, and then having her drinking through the day. It's almost an excuse that, well, she's doing it, so I can do it as well.
Well, I just think that instead of being bombarded with all of these ads encouraging us to drink, there should be some more education around what alcohol can actually do to us and the negative effects it's having.
But do you guys think the onus is on the influencer to actually reject these campaigns? Because I know it is a hard time for influencers. As we were saying, a lot of their income has dropped off because brands can't be paying for the advertisement they previously had. But do you think a lot of influencers should actually just be saying, no, I'm not going to do these ads?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I did notice on the weekend, Sarah Davidson, who's an influencer, put out a video and she had partnered up with Jacob Creek Wines. And in the video, it showed her and her husband putting together a boozy lunch for her family. But in the caption of the video, she said that she doesn't really regularly partake in drinking. And I found that odd because for someone who also doesn't drink regularly, I would find it weird to be approached by an alcohol company and then be putting out an ad saying, oh yeah, buy this alcohol, when I don't actually drink it. It kind of took the validity away from the ad.
Well, she did it in a clever way though, because she obviously doesn't drink. That's why she put on the lunch for her family. So it was clever of her to actually promote it in that way rather than her just pretending she was drinking it.
Oh yeah. I think it was one of the better ads.
Well, the thing that didn't really sit well with me was seeing a number of influencers who are mental health advocates promoting alcohol as this kind of self-care product. And as I touched on, because it is a depressant, it just didn't sit well with me.
I get what you're saying, but I think it's a bit unfair because I think even if you are a mental health advocate, you can responsibly enjoy a drink. So I don't know.
I think if your audience is made up of people following you because you are that advocate, it is a bit troubling.
Do you know what though? I mean, I look at some of those ads and I see straight through it. I'm like, that's an ad.
Well, it would have been nice if people had used the hashtag drink responsibly, which wasn't used in any of the ads. I suppose moving forward into more normality, it will be really interesting to see how the alcohol companies again pivot, and with more of a budget now for influencers, how that's going to move on and look like in the future.
Literally so stunning.
Let's move on to the pit and peak of the social media week. And the peak for me had to be when Kim Kardashian shared a worksheet her son Saint had made for her for Mother's Day. Did you guys see this?
Yes.
It was bloody hilarious. So in the sheet, he had to fill out some questions about his mum and included her age, which he put as 11 years old. It also said what she likes to do, the best thing she cooks, her favourite food. It was quite interesting that he noted she likes to leave me alone. Now, I'm not quite sure if that was insinuating that he's always with his nanny.
Well, I've read a couple of articles about mum shaming during the coronavirus pandemic, and Kim Kardashian has been one who has been shamed a lot. I mean, she got in trouble because she asked her audience, what are some fun activities that we can do with kids during this time? And people thought, oh, because you're a mum, you should be able to come up with your own activity. So I think she has been unfairly criticized during this time.
Well, one other thing, I mean, I'm not trying to shame her, but it was funny. He put, as you can see, my mum is special because, and he wrote, she snuggles me and she buys things for me. Now, I found that quite hilarious considering her wealth and the amount that I'm assuming they would be spoiled.
That being said, I think it's all in fun. I mean, she probably wouldn't have shared it if he was being genuine.
Do you think the teachers sit there and the kids are like, oh, should I write this? And they're like, yeah, go on.
Well, moving on to the pit of the week, and I am getting so frustrated because I am literally seeing the I am beautiful filter everywhere, and it's really annoying me. So for those who aren't familiar with the filter, it is one where you kind of end up looking like an alien. So your nose is really thinned out, then you've got really big lips, and I think it also enlarges your eyes. Now, Bette Judd has been guilty of using this filter quite a lot, and I usually watch her stories, and I'm kind of thinking, why does she look so different? And then there's that light bulb moment where I'm like, oh, she's using that filter.
The thing that sounds a bit contradictory is calling it I am beautiful filter, because to me that sounds like a caption about embracing your own natural beauty, not putting on a filter to make your nose look incredibly thin and your lips look big.
I just feel like it's weird for influencers to do it because we obviously know what they look like, and then it's just normalizing them looking a certain way. So then do they then begin face tuning their photos so they look like the filter they're using on their stories?
I think Instagram's going to run into a lot of trouble with these new filters because, as you say, there needs to be some regulations because it's promoting plastic surgery for children because they're getting a look at what they could look like with these enhanced features, and it's not giving them any realistic impression of what other women look like in real life.
Well, it's really contradictory because I feel like the Instagram stories were brought in to provide a more authentic look into people's lives. And since the introduction of the filters, it's now beginning to have that aesthetic across to the Instagram story that we kind of rebelled against on the feed.
I got the rules. Now I do modeling. I got the rules. Mama modeling.
Now let's get into the reality wrap. And after 18 years and 40 seasons, The American Bachelor finally has a black leading man. Now, Kate, can you tell us about Matt James?
So Matt is a 28-year-old real estate broker, and the most interesting thing about his selection is the fact that he hasn't actually yet appeared on The Bachelorette. So he was actually friends of a contestant from Hannah B's season. So people have seen him when she went on the hometown visit because he was a friend of one of the contestants. And he actually was picked to appear in Claire Crawley's season of The Bachelorette, which is yet to be filmed because it's been pushed back because of the pandemic. So he was announced in her cast, but suddenly he's now been taken off her cast and is The Bachelor. And this is all because of the Bachelor Diversity campaign that was launched a couple of days ago. And in a couple of days, it received over 90,000 signatures.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, it is amazing that we are going to have our first Black Bachelor in America. But the thing that is troubling is it does seem like a knee-jerk reaction and kind of almost not very genuine by the Bachelor team.
Well, the interesting thing is the diversity campaign has actually called for 13 steps for the ABC and Warner Brothers, who produce The American Bachelor, to combat racism. So the first step was to actually cast their first Black Bachelor.
On your view of it being a knee-jerk reaction, that's actually what Rachel Lindsay, who was the first Black female Bachelorette, that's exactly what she said. She congratulated Matt and she said, "I'm happy to see that a Black man was cast after 18 years and 14 seasons. I believe it is a step in the right direction. I would be remiss to not point out that based on the current climate, it feels like a knee-jerk reaction and a result of societal pressure. This announcement, without any further commitments regarding diversity, sweepingly brushes deeper issues under the rug. Until we see action to address the systematic racism within the franchise, the casting news today is equivalent to the trend of posting a black box on your social media account without other steps taken to dismantle the systems of injustice." What do you guys think of her comments?
Well, it's actually not the first time she's condemned the Bachelor series. So she's got her own podcast talking about the Bachelor, and she has come out and said it's embarrassing that they haven't had a Black Bachelor. And 2 years ago, she actually said that the Bachelor production team didn't look after her in one of the After the Rose ceremonies and that she was getting baited and harassed on air. She's also been critical of the casting of The Bachelor before. So she was saying that social media influencers are ruining The Bachelor because they're just picking them as contestants and they're not actually there to find love. So it's quite interesting that she has made so many comments about The Bachelor and Bachelorette, which are true. I think it's great because I don't think we would have seen a Black Bachelor in the 25th season of The Bachelor if it hadn't been for Rachel pushing it.
Well, it's interesting to look a bit closer to home. And of course, in Australia, Blake Garvey was our second Bachelor and he is, of course, a Black man. But what is troubling is despite the fact that he was our second Bachelor, Black people have not been well represented as contestants in the Australian franchise, and that's something they too have been heavily criticised for.
Well, and that's exactly what this diversity campaign petition is calling for. So not only did they want a Black man cast as the lead, but they also said that Black and Indigenous people of colour should make up 35% of the cast. Now, Bachelor creator Mike Fleece has actually previously blamed the show's lack of diversity on the claim that for whatever reason, people of colour don't come forward to actually be on the show. And I feel like you can't say that. Like,
it's a bit of a cop-out.
How do you prove that?
But I'm sorry, when you look at shows like The Bachelor or any other reality show, they do have casting call and people do apply, but most of the time they ignore those calls.
Yeah,
and
they're
they
people go and who are scouted.
They find them on Instagram. So that's ridiculous.
Exactly right. So why are we not looking at Instagram of people of color and inviting them to be on the show? It's a bit of a cop out.
Well, despite it being a knee-jerk reaction, it is a good reaction and it is a positive step forward. And this guy, he looks incredible. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this all plays out.
Yeah, well, Matt himself has actually been asked about what he thinks of the decision, and he said he thinks it's a step in the right direction. And he was actually asked about what type of woman he's looking for, and he said it's not a black and white thing, so I'm hoping that when the limo pulls up, there's a lot of diversity and I see every type of woman coming out of that limo. So it will be interesting to see how The Bachelor follows through with that casting process.
Well, it's kind of ironic because I watched the show Unreal, which is sort of a fictitious take on The Bachelor.
Well, it's actually been produced by a former Bachelor producer. So a lot of people think it's kind of behind the scenes of what really happens on the show.
Yeah. And even in a few of the episodes, they've brought up the issue that there aren't a lot of people of color on those shows. And there was a reoccurring sort of storyline that they needed to have this particular man who was a person of color make a certain week. Like apparently a person of color had never made it past week 3 or something crazy like that.
Well, it's not surprising because you do see that they have a couple of black guys on there, but they never seem to actually, as you say, make it through a certain level, and they're never very big parts of the show.
Well, Lindsay, I think she was probably only one woman of color that actually made it to the top 4.
And I think it has a lot more to do with the percentage of people of color put in as contestants. If they suddenly put in 35% contestants who are of color, we will see a lot more people of color make it further into the show.
Yeah, well, The Bachelor did release a statement on the issue and they said, "We know we have a responsibility to make sure the love stories we're seeing on screen are representative of the world we live in. And we are proudly in service to our audience. This is just the beginning and we will continue to take action with regard to diversity issues on this franchise." So fingers crossed that this is the start of a really big change and we will see The Bachelor ticking off those 13 points that The Bachelor Diversity Campaign has asked for.
If you said to me, Sky, what's 8 times 2? Like, I would not even know. I cannot tell you.
Now let's get into our favorite topic of the week, and it is, of course, Awkward Turtle. Now, we thought we'd kick off this discussion by talking about the awkward and kind of eye-rolling things that your partner does that then you're somewhat implicated in. Now, Kate, you have a story to share about your ex.
Yeah, so my ex-boyfriend used to ask me to take photos of him just shirtless to see if he was progressing at the gym or if he looked, quote, fat.
Now, I think it was more awkward for me because I used to walk in on these little photo shoots. They'd happen downstairs and I just walk into a shirtless
Weren't really photo shoots. He literally just stood there and I snapped the photo on his phone. I didn't have any of these photos. And another awkward thing was he was fanatical about practicing his golf swing, which was so annoying. You'd be at the shops and he'd be practicing that stupid like squat pose and the swing back, and sometimes I'd have to film that, and it was just so awkward. I didn't want to be involved. It made me feel uncomfortable.
This has actually made me think of another awkward thing that my ex used to do, but I wasn't actually implicated in it, but I would be embarrassed because after every meal he would get his napkin and blow his nose.
Ugh.
And this would happen obviously at family dinner. And one time he blew his nose into a material napkin as well.
That is so disgusting. It's not a bloody hanky.
Actually, but you kind of are implicated because you're with him. Do you know what I mean? It comes across badly on you.
What about when my ex-boyfriend, I think it was when we used to go to Cotton On to buy stuff. And
what do you mean used to? Cotton On's great.
Yeah, I know it's great, but I had somehow got him into Cotton On. He used to buy like expensive stuff and then he really loved Cotton On. And I remember being in the change rooms because they were unisex and he would like parade out of them and I'd be in there just like, you know, I hate those people that parade around in their outfits in front of the mirror. It would just be so awkward.
That's very unusual for a boy though, because usually they don't like to try anything on. They'll just be like, yep, that size large, that's mine.
That kind of reminds me, do you remember when you were younger and you used to go shopping with your mum, and then mum would always make you try on the clothes and like do a little fashion parade for dad, and dad
when
just,
you got home?
Yeah, and dad wouldn't give a shit what was going on.
No, but dad now does that. So dad's really got into online shopping. So at family dinner, he'll come down and show his purchases. It's so cute.
Well, if your partner does anything awkward and you're somewhat involved.
Implicated in
that awkwardness. We'd love it if you could share it in our podcast community. So you can find us at Outspoken Podcast Community on Facebook.
Yes, it would be really nice to hear that other poor people have been implicated in these embarrassing tasks and it's not just me.
Now, I think that's all we have time for. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. If you have enjoyed it, it would be great if you could share a screenshot of where you're listening from on your Instagram story and tag us at @outspoken_the_podcast.
It would also be great if you could leave us a review. It really helps us get into the charts and more people listening.
And make sure that you are subscribed because that way you know when our latest episodes will drop.